Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly
sex,
show.
Sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
in your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your word that they be preaching, cause here's the
Checkerfin.
Education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the Checkerfin. Education gadfly show.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, the indomitable Rick Hess.
Hello, Michael.
How are you today, Rick?
I am well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm fine. Now, Rick, I understand that you have some exciting professional news to share.
Yes.
Well, share away. What are you going to be doing starting next week?
I'm going to be in Iowa giving a talk about school boards.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about. You are going to be an adjunct lecturer at the University of Harvard Education School.
That's true. The University of Harvard is...
The University of Harvard. Did I really just say that?
University of Harvard at Cambridge.
As a proud alum of the University of Harvard.
I went to public education for my whole schooling.
As a proud alum of University of Harvard, much as you are of Michigan University, I am. I think it should be a lot of fun. So,
Rick, you've been a frequent critic of education schools, and Harvard seems to be one of the flagship schools. Seem a little bit ironic to you that they have invited you to teach there?
I think it's kind of sweet.
Yeah?
Yeah. Right. It's like, I'm hoping they'll have good pastries.
Well, that's good hope. Are you going to be their token conservative? Is that what this is about?
I don't know. You know, there's so many permutations and inundations and repudiations. It's hard to know exactly who's what's token where.
Well, I hope that you have your University of Harvard students listening to the podcast.
I think I'll make it mandatory, baby.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to hearing from your adventures up in Cambridge.
It's like another country.
All right. Yeah. And, shoot us a note out there, listeners, if you have any suggestions for Rick as he enters this new role at Harvard, or, anything in particular that you think he should teach his students. Mm. At the university. Send that to letters@edexcellence.net. Mm. Let's get going. We've got, of course, a game of Pardon the Gadfly. We then will interview our very own Liam Julian about our new Fordham Fellows program that started this week. And finally, Liam will be here to share some education news of the weird. Sound good, Rick?
Sounds good to me.
All right, Christina, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
All right. Chairman Miller and Ranking Member McKeon of the House Education and Labor Committee have released a discussion draft of their proposal to reauthorize Title I of No Child Left Behind. They will allow states to differentiate between really bad schools that fail across the board and so-so schools that fail for only one or two subgroups.
Those are the technical categories, I believe, right?
Verbatim. The former are predominantly in the inner city. The latter are predominantly in the suburbs. Is this a sop to middle-class voters and to the NEA?
Sure. It is. And that's okay, because the middle-class voters and the NEA are right that there's no virtue in defending poorly designed accountability measures. And so good for Miller and McKeon for... moving on this a little bit.
Well, so say a little more about what you mean. Poorly designed because it's only a pass-fail right now?
It's poorly designed on several fronts. But, right, one of them is that I've never heard of a sensible accountability system which said everybody who doesn't get over some, relatively unhelpful line is in need of improvement.
All right, but one of the genius of No Child Left Behind was to put pressure on schools to close the achievement gap, even schools in the suburbs where maybe most of the kids were doing fine, those kids who maybe were affluent and white, but perhaps had a significant minority population of African Americans, low-income kids, who were not doing well. And that No Child Left Behind said, we're not going to just look at average test scores. And then we're not going to say you're a good school if all of your black kids haven't passed the test. So, I think there's some real concern that this is going to ease up on that pressure. Mm. Furthermore, if we go back
to the famous New York Times piece.
Thank you very much. That's right. Furthermore, if we go back to the days when the Title I and the Elementary and Secondary Education Act is all about failing inner city schools, you're never going to hear about it again. Right?
Mm.
I mean, most people out there are going to just say, well, that's somebody else's problem, and we'll go back to feeling like our schools are just fine.
So let's hold the line on a poorly designed, unrealistic standard, darn it.
That is what I'm saying.
Okay. But you certainly make the argument coherently and cogently.
Oh, thanks,
props to you, babe.
Thanks, baby.
All right. The folks at the College Board are getting a lot of pushback about their audits of advanced placement AP classes. Some teachers whose students typically pass the test with flying colors are being told that their syllabi aren't up to snuff. Is this a good idea gone wrong?
Something does seem fishy about this. The original idea was a good idea. College Board was worried that a lot of people were putting the label of advanced placement on courses and then teaching material that was not at all advanced in any way, especially schools that were under pressure to dramatically increase the number of kids in AP classes. But it would seem like if you were going to do that kind of audit, you would start with schools where kids weren't passing the test or weren't even taking the test. You wouldn't start with teachers who were getting great results already. I think you should assume that if a teacher's students are passing the test in large numbers, something good is going on in the classroom.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the wrinkle here, of course, is that at least in the popular media accounts that I've seen, the teachers who are complaining about this are primarily teachers in highfalutin, accomplished public schools, where there's a likelihood that they could probably nap for half or more of the school year, and a substantial chunk of the kids would probably still get threes or better on the AP. But that's right. You know, so the question of what exactly constitutes, you know, good enough performance that we should presume the teacher knows what they're doing, it's a slightly open question, but I think that's right. I mean, the AP is a private college board's a private organization. It wants to make sure that even in this push to democratize access to the AP, that it still means something. But you know, you can do, you know, but auditing ought to be used in combination with focusing on, you know, are these, you know, are the kids coming out of these classes knowing what it is they want to know? And that doesn't seem to be getting as much attention as it probably should, given that that's ultimately the key question.
You know, it's kind of funny. It seems like you are calling for more rigorous enforcement of a national standard than I am.
Hmm.
How do you like that?
How do you like that, baby?
New school year, new arguments. I like it.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait for 08.
Okay, back to audits. Phi Delta Kappa recently did an audit of Wake County Public Schools in Raleigh and told the superintendent that his principals had too much authority and that they should be reined in. Is this the stupidest recommendation you've ever heard in your life?
Oh, Christina, that's harsh. Mike, here you go. I'm spinning around again for you. No, not necessarily. You know, certainly my predilection is to suggest that superintendents and principals are far too bound in by statute and norm. On the other hand, you know, I wouldn't want to say offhand that these principals should have, you know, should necessarily have a lot of autonomy or a lot of authority. The amount of autonomy and authority you want to give your people depends on how you're running your organization, whether they're actually equipped to take advantage of it. You know, if you're a head football coach, for instance, I don't know that it's necessarily good policy to give each of your position coaches as much autonomy as possible. It depends on your philosophy of how you're approaching this. It depends on the people you've got under you. It depends how it works. So, you know, I'd withhold judgment on the Phi Delta Kappa recommendations until I actually knew something about the situation in Wake County.
Well, from the popular news accounts of that audit, I understand that their concern was that principal quality was uneven. All right, but to take your football coach analogy, you know, if a football coach was worried that his assistant coaches weren't up to snuff, therefore couldn't handle the autonomy, that football coach should fire those other coaches and bring in some people who can get the job done. It seems strange to do an audit like this, and instead of saying, wow, you need to improve the quality of your principals so that they can make good decisions, they can run these schools effectively, their answer is, well, you got some lousy principals, so you should really rein them back in.
Well, I mean, I think, right, so one response is I think that's right. One response is you might not be able to find better quality principals, in which case, though, then it would seem that the proper recommendation is not rein in autonomy for all principals, but to go to an earned autonomy system where your effective principals get to do their thing.
All right.
What the heck was that, Kobe?
I don't know. Is that it sound like a horse's? Yeah. Are you saying that Rick is a horse's?
Oh, that was a no. The bell's a horse's patoo?
Well, that is it. That's all the time we have from Part of the Gadfly. Nicely done, Rick.
Oh, that was sad. That was so quick and easy.
Yeah. I'm telling you, we're back in form. Back to
school.
Boom,
baby.
Back to school. Speaking of back to school, we have a new program starting here at the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation this week.
Do tell.
I will tell. In fact, Liam will tell. Joining us is Liam Julian. You all know him as the education news of the weird guy, but Liam actually has other jobs than that at the Fordham Foundation. Though it takes him much of the week to prepare for Education News of the Weird, he has a few hours to do some other things, including now lead the Fordham Fellows Program.
You go, dog.
Liam, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thanks.
So, Liam, tell our listeners a little bit about the Fordham Fellows Program and what it's trying to achieve.
Sure. The Fordham Fellows Program is a program that takes aspiring education policy wonks who have spent some time in the classroom and places them in different education policy organizations around Washington, D.C., where they work and learn and challenge their assumptions.
What are some of these organizations, Liam?
The Education Trust, Education Sector, National Governors Association. There are others.
Those all have education or governors in the title.
Yeah. So there's eight of them. There's eight fellows and eight organizations. And you know, yesterday was the big kickoff. They came here to Fordham for an orientation. And you know, they got to hear Checker Finn speak. And we had Sandy Jacobs from NCTQ come on over. And Craig Gerald, who works for the Ed in 08 campaign, came over. Both both Craig and Sandy are TFA alum, Teach for America alum. So it was really good for the fellows who have spent time in the classroom to hear from people who had also spent time in the classroom and then made that transition to policy.
Yeah. Well, I had a great time meeting them yesterday. It's a fantastic group. Let's hear a little bit about them, Liam. Tell us about who they are and their background.
Yeah, sure. I'll just go alphabetically.
Okay.
By fellow.
By fellow, yes.
Zach Blattner is working at the National Governors Association. He grew up in Maine. Gabrielle Capone is going to be working at SEED. She has been teaching for the past 4 years in Atlanta. Caitlin Farrell is working at the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. She's from Maryland, right outside of D.C., went to Dartmouth, worked in TFA in New York City for a while. Davita Gatlin, Center for American Progress, grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina, went to NC State University, then taught in France, but not really in France, on this little island in the middle of the Indian Ocean that is essentially part of France.
What's the name of that island, Liam?
Reunion Island is what it's called.
That's right. It is.
Yeah. And she's going to be at the Center for American Progress. Liam Honingsberg, another Liam, is going to be at Achieve. Liam did Teach for America in Phoenix. Then he went over to Madrid to do work on a Fulbright grant, researching Spanish educational policies. He went to Berkeley. We have Cecilia Lee. She's at Education Sector. She's from Vienna, Virginia. And for the past 4 years, she's been a education reporter. She, for the past 2 years, wrote for the paper in Wilmington.
And also tutored at the Match Charter School.
That's right.
In Boston with Michael Goldstein, I believe a fan of the podcast.
Kate Sullivan went to Kansas. She did Teach for America in Oakland, California. She's really interested in the sort of small high school idea. So she's going to be working at the Alliance for Excellent Education, where they do a lot about high schools. Maya Wallace is at the Education Trust. She is from Sacramento, and she's statistically oriented. She's done a lot of sort of curriculum development work as well, and that's one of the reasons why she was kind of drawn to Education Trust.
Well, fantastic, Liam. Well, you know, listeners who are interested in this bunch can follow along with their own development in the policy world. They're going to be doing a Fordham Fellows blog, which we look forward to, where they will sound off on the education issues of the day. So, Liam, thanks for that. We'll look forward to hearing some updates throughout the fall semester.
That sounds good.
All right. So now we're going to turn, put your hat on, because we're now heading to Education News of the Weird. So, Liam, welcome back. And what's weird this week?
I like that.
Lovely.
Weirdly enough, nothing really weird seems to have happened in education.
In the first week of school?
Yeah, it's it's hard to believe. So I thought instead what I would do, you know, back to school, I would just tell a few education jokes.
That's sad.
Why did the dog do so well in school? The dog do well in school.
Why is that, Liam?
The dog was the teacher's pet.
The production value is nice.
I think you wanted to put the emphasis on the pet rather than teachers there, though, bud.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well,
not the teacher's pet.
No, but that's predictable.
The teacher's pet.
No, but that's predictable. Okay, all right. Well, I'll try. Okay, listen to this one.
Okay.
Which high school subject do runners like the most? Runners, what do they like?
Do tell.
Geography. Okay, we got three more. What did the student see on top of the desk in shop class? They saw dust. Sawdust. What is the cafeteria employee's favorite subject? Cafeteria employee, favorite subject? Spamish.
Ooh.
Spamish?
Hmm.
No, nothing.
Hmm.
And finally, to end on a happy note, what is the friendliest school? The high school. The high school.
That's good Halloween music, man. Save that.
And,
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that's education news of the weird.
Well, not only did nothing weird happen this week, nothing much got done in the Fordham office this week either.
I gotta say,
Kobe and Liam scoured the internet for their sound effects.
The sound effects are sweet, guys.
All right, that is all of our time we have. Join us 2 weeks from now when we will be back for the Education Gadfly Show and Bonafide Education News of the Weird.
Mm.
All right, till then.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.